When Renee Askins was in college, she had a dream. She wanted a place, a big place, where wolves could run free. And she decided the ideal place would be Yellowstone Park. So she set out to make it happen. Askins spent the next 15 years working to bring wolves back to Yellowstone. And the most remarkable part of the story? Her dream came true. After years of political wrangling, biologists reintroduced wolves to Yellowstone in 1995. Askins writes about the experience in her memoir, Shadow Mountain. She told Ann Strangchamps that her passion for wolves started in college. She joined a wolf research project. But right after she started, something gruesome happened. The wolf pack turned on the alpha female. They killed her and attacked one of the pack's new wolf pups.
That pup died, and my supervisor had to go in and remove the remaining pup. She was at that time really, I think, only a day old. He brought her out, and I was on duty at that point in the observation hut, and he handed her to me at a day old and said, "You will raise her." And my life started on a total different course with that moment.
What's a tiny day-old wolf pup like? I mean, what did you have to do to raise her?
She was literally mouse size. You know, her eyes were closed, and I did have to get up every 2 hours and bottle feed her and stimulate her genitals with a damp cloth so she could expel. And even though the bond between us was extraordinarily intimate, I didn't feel ascendant. I felt as though I was with an equal. And then I think as you watch an animal in that sort of circumstance where you're so intimately close to them, you begin to see the ways that they see. And for me, that was very humbling.
You write really beautifully in your book about what some of those first encounters with Natasha meant, and especially the feelings it evoked in you to begin to recognize that this was a completely different species. And there was one passage I actually wanted to ask you about. I wanted to read a little bit because it really struck me. You wrote that it's a breathless sensation, as though your brain were gasping, sucking in an insight like thirst gulps water. It's as though something's yawning inside you and your entire body needs to expand to accommodate seeing in a different dimension. One can feel one's mind stretching to encompass and absorb the recognition of such an otherness. That must have been an incredible experience for you.
I think the experience of awe is quite a singular one, and it's something that we often feel in the presence of the wild. The experience with Natasha was, for me, a real beginning, and it was bittersweet. I mean, I must say, I really fell in love with that animal, and to know that she was destined for a life in captivity was unspeakably difficult to fathom or accept. And when Natasha actually was taken away, I was so paralyzed with pain, but I stood up on this favorite lookout where she and I used to go, and I said, "I promise you will make a difference. I will do something for your species." And all I knew is that I had to fight for the presence of wolves in the wild.
It was because of the experience with Natasha and of knowing that she was going to have a life in captivity that you were fired with the idea of bringing wolves back to Yellowstone Park. I mean, wolves hadn't lived in Yellowstone since 1926 when humans finally wiped them out. You were barely a college student. What made you think you could do this?
Well, ignorance. The year before, I had gone to Yellowstone for my first time and totally fallen in love with this spectacular place. Anybody who visits Yellowstone, especially if you happen to hit it when you're not in those long lines of RVs, etc. The sheer power of the place is like no other in the world, as far as I'm concerned. So I'd been very moved by the place itself. And then while I was doing, subsequent to that, while I was doing my senior thesis, a man that had just completed his master's in Yellowstone on the extermination of wolves, and he looked at some of the ecological impacts of that whole process of exterminating wolves and what it meant to Yellowstone. And his name was John Weaver, and he was really the spark, I think, that got the fires of the whole restoration of wolves to Yellowstone going.
And what you took on, the political struggle to bring wolves back to Yellowstone, was an enormous, just immense task. It also sounds as though it was, to a certain extent, out of character for you. You were a shy person, maybe a retiring person, and yet you wound up spearheading an entire movement and having to face down, I mean, you know, death threats even. I mean, incredible anger. How do you think you did all this?
Well, first of all, I certainly wouldn't say that I did it all. There were literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that worked on this effort. And it may be that my gift was that it was a cause that my heart was totally entwined in, where for others it might have been more of an intellectual, you know, this is a wrong that needs to be righted, or an ethical motivation. I think that one of the main points of my book, Shadow Mountain, one of the real reasons I wrote it was I wanted people to see that sort of if I could do it, and I was someone really without training, without financing, without the character traits of being thick-skinned or really, I don't know if anyone would have called me retiring. I don't think I could be honored that way. But I certainly am not a rebel rouser in terms of gravitating toward controversy. And so one of the reasons I wrote this memoir was to sort of tell the stories of my experience and hopefully to show people that to make a difference, all we have to do is start.
Did you ever feel that there was any kind of, I don't know, grace involved in what you were doing, as though fate was lending you a hand, giving you a push from time to time?
I had a lot of experiences like that. And, you know, in the beginning, I suppose I would have just assumed they were coincidences. I mean, little things like I went to Africa during my senior year and wrote John Weaver and another biologist I had met from the Yellowstone Project these long resumeic letters asking if I, once I graduated, could come work for them. And when I got back to the States and I'd received no response, I was just devastated. And I tried to call, and it turned out that Weaver had left his position and Kaminsky had left the school where he was at. And anyway, it just seemed that there was no one and no way for me to actually follow up on this promise, you know, I'd made to Natasha. And I was really stymied. And simultaneously, I was being encouraged by my parents and my college professors to go to law school. And the night I was actually packed to move to Vermont to establish residency to go to the Vermont Law School, that night, now this is 2 years after I had met Weaver doing my senior thesis, and almost a year after I had written him and Tim Kaminsky letters and made all these phone calls, that night before I was to drive away at dawn the next morning at 10:30 at night, I got a phone call from Tim Kaminsky, the other person I had met doing my thesis. And he said, you know, Weaver and I were just talking about you, and you had told him you were so interested in working on the project, and we wondered what had happened. And I was just speechless. That, you know, this, I mean, it was just so extraordinary that after 2 years of absolutely no contact, that, you know, just at the time I was making this decision, I would get this phone call.
There's a kind of coda to the story of the first wolf you raised, Natasha. There's a second Natasha, one of the wolves who is going to Yellowstone when, you know, the first wolves were reintroduced in 1995. Will you tell us about the second Natasha?
The second Natasha, I was in Canada near Jasper National Park, where we were doing the actual logistical elements of catching wolves and processing them for the actual reintroduction. And the helicopter brought in two animals from the Petite Lake area. And the minute the helicopter landed, I just had this prickly sort of feeling, the same feeling I had with Natasha so many times. And I have no explanation for what that emotion was, except for there was just a sense of familiar to me. So I just sat with her and talked to her, or maybe more appropriately, babbled. And I just knew that she was going to be the most important animal in that whole effort. I got a lot of teasing about my attachment to this animal, who I, of course, called Natasha. You know, I kept saying, that's going to be the mama of Yellowstone wolves. You watch. And everybody, you know, yeah, Renee. And I said, that's it. That's going to be the wolf. And it certainly turned out to be the case. And now, 5 years later, I think over 70% of the wolf population now in Yellowstone are descendants of hers. We have now approximately, I think the last count was 154 wolves comprising 13 packs. And Natasha not only is legendary because of her life in Yellowstone, but just because of the unusual character and strength this wolf illustrated in the subsequent 5 years of recovery. There are just so many stories about her that I could tell you for hours and hours.
Renee Askins founded the Wolf Fund in 1986. Her memoir is called Shadow Mountain. She talked with N. Strange Champs.